tight back to Psalm chapter number 5. In thinking about the subject of worship, something I think maybe that we're guilty of, or that we are not understanding of, if you will, is that our relationship with God follows some of the same parameters, guidelines, or experiences as our relationships with each other, with our spouses, with our children, with our fellow man, of course, to a great different degree with our God. But there are lessons, there are things that we can learn from our relationships with each other that teach us or will enlighten us as to our relationship with God. And when you think about the word relationship, it's not something that a lot of times we like to think about. We don't like to work on our relationships. That's the case, especially for us men. We don't like that. We like it to just happen. If it could just happen, that would be great. And so we don't like to have to work at it or to work on it. And sometimes for women too, most of the times because they're frustrated, because their husbands maybe don't want to. But our relationships have to be worked at in order for us to have any kind of relationship at all. And as we consider our worshiping of God, it is a relational issue. It is a relational issue in that as we bring Him sacrifice, spiritual sacrifice of praise, honor, glory, etc., it is emblematic of our relationship. It is strengthening of our relationship. It is deepening of our relationship. It is even picturesque of our relationship. It is a lot of things. It is a relational issue. And so as we consider this subject, we can't divorce it from our relationship we have with God and treat it as, and we shouldn't do this with anything, but we can't divorce it from that and then just treat it like a teaching or a cold doctrine that we learn fact and we recite fact and those sorts of things. It is something that has to be constantly cared for and constantly worked upon if we are to achieve worshiping the Lord, because it doesn't come natural to us. We mentioned this morning in what worship is not. We know that it is not automatic in any way. Our relationship with God on our end is not automatic in any way. If you want to have a relationship with God that is more than a fire escape from hell, being saved from your sins, then you have to do some work, don't you? You have to put in some effort to get to know God, to stay close with God, to walk with God, to talk with Him, to be close to Him, and all of those wonderful, wonderful benefits that we get from that. It doesn't just occur. And the reason for that is because we are selfish people. That's what our flesh desires. Our flesh, when left to itself, will always cause us to focus on me. Focusing on me does not increase relationship. It does not increase intimacy, which hopefully we're going to talk about next Sunday evening, if the Lord allows. It doesn't increase our coming together in any way, with those that we have relationship with. I mean, you know, think about our relationships as far as our husbands or our marriages go. You know, think about a husband that puts some time and effort into his after-work interaction with his wife. He puts some thought into, I wonder what her day has been like. I wonder how she's going to feel. I wonder what she is going to need from me when I get home. I wonder how I could benefit her. I wonder how I could bless her. I wonder how I could listen to her, how I could provide for her something that she needs. I wonder how I could do those things, having that forethought, having that that effort and work put into it shows the great desire to draw close and be at one, or to be in that relationship, to bolster, to deepen that relationship. But so often when we're coming home from work, us men, we're focused on us. And I use the subject or the examples of men so much because that's what I have the most depth of experience concerning. Because that's how I've been. I know that. That's how we are. But the man that will step outside of that, and the man that will spend time thinking and considering and purposing to draw close to his wife, even in that 5-10 minute after work interaction, will do so much for that relationship and so much for that life that they have together. It would be truly amazing. And so the point is that if we don't work at our relationships with each other, and if we don't work at our relationship with God, we will not have one. And so this idea of worship is intentional, or is something that we must work at. It is a relationship issue. We notice here in Psalm 5, where we left off this morning in verse number 7, David says, "But as for me, I will come into thy house in the multitude of thy mercy, and in thy fear will I worship toward thy holy temple." But as for me, those are the words we left off with this morning, David saying. And it reminds us of what Joshua said as he was encouraging the people to choose whom they would serve. He said, "I don't care if you go back to serve the gods of Egypt. Me and my house, we are going to serve the Lord. But as for me," and David in like manner says, "But as for me, I am going to worship the Lord." You do what you want. Let society do as it pleases. We see he shows his purpose in making this statement. He understood that those that he mentioned before here, the foolish in verse 5, wickedness and the evil that dwelleth within them in verse 4, he understood that they certainly don't seek after God, and that's not encouraging. Sometimes we look around and see God's own people not seeking after God or having a relationship with Him. And that's not encouraging. We see people doing it all wrong in many other religions. And that's not encouraging. We need, like David, to say, "But as for me," in David's mind and heart, none of that really mattered. We need to reignite in our hearts the desire to worship God to such a degree that we may, like David, say, "Everyone else do as they will, but as for me, I will serve the Lord." David's psalm here in chapter 5 gives us some helpful keys to igniting worship. And if this morning's worship or igniting worship principle was adoration, and that gave us the idea and the understanding that a spiritual, tangible possession that we have is adoration, and we bring that unto God and sacrifice of it unto Him in worship, and that would have been a broader concept. Tonight, we want to see the worship reunite or reignited principle from David here that is more practical and more experimental in how we live our daily lives, and that is intentionality. Worship reignited has to be, if it is to be reignited, has to be an intentional endeavor in our lives. It really does. It has to be an intentional endeavor. And so as we see David's attitude here in verse number 7, we see he says, "But as for me," he says, "I will." That shows purpose, doesn't it? That shows intent. Now, often we will preach about good intentions and understanding that they're not enough, right? Because they aren't. But if we are to serve the Lord, if we are to worship God, there has to be some intentionality about it. So this is a different way of applying that thought. We must be intentional in regards to our worship. When we set our worship on autopilot, all that happens really is attendance. The physical appearance is all that is made, but no worship is really conducted. To truly worship the Lord, there has to be that intentionality, just like the man that wants to deepen and strengthen his relationship with his wife has to, with intent, interact with her. Has to, with intent, show his love and care for her. So too do we with God. We must be intentional in the way that we act, the way that we move, in our worshiping of God. Things are of a much higher value, both to us and to others, when we move with intentionality. When, you know, someone, let's say, forgets to celebrate an anniversary, forgets a birthday, forgets a special occasion, certainly that's not very encouraging. That's not very blessed. But on the other hand, if somebody goes out of the way to plan and purpose and do all of the work necessary to celebrate one of those special occasions, you can see a great intentionality on their part to show their love, care, and devotion for you. And it is of great value to you. When we move with intent instead of contempt, routine, or disconnect, we find our relationships suffer much from this, as we've already brought out. When we take our time for granted, when we're just checking that proverbial box, as we mention a lot, when we're just spending time with one another or feigning to show interest just so that we don't cause a fight or cause, you know, trouble, when we're just getting by. And let's be honest, when in our relationship, so often that's all we do is just enough to get by. We need to be very intentional about how we spend time together with our children, with our spouses, with our parents, with our relationships, or else it'll be very shallow. And most of God's people, a good percentage of God's people today, have a very shallow relationship with God because there is no intentionality. They expect God to do all the work. I mean, after all, He did all the work in saving us, didn't He? He did all the work in drawing us from the depths of sin and the grasp of Satan to Christ in salvation. Certainly He'll do all the work afterwards too. That's not the case. We read in James that He tells us that we need to draw nigh unto God. We have a responsibility. And so we're not going to be able to worship if there is no intent in our heart to direct us to worship, to direct us to God in that way. Having this kind of intent reveals the emotion of the heart to the other person. That's what makes it so special to the wife when the husband comes home and it is clear and plain that he has put some effort into fill in the blank, whatever it is. Whether it's just that after work interaction, whether it's just taking 5 minutes to look her in the eye and say, "How was your day? Tell me. Right now, how was your day?" Or whatever it may be. Everyone's different, so it's going to be different for everybody. But just taking that time to show them that they are the center of your attention, to show them that you care about them above everything else that is physically transpiring in life at that time. And that is exactly how we need to see our worship as we come into the house of God. We need to be connecting with God in a very, very powerful way and showing Him the desire and intent of our heart through sacrifice. Connecting with God in a powerful way and allowing all the rest of the world to simply melt away in this time. It deepens our connection with God. But again, it takes forethought. It takes planning. It takes sacrifice for that to happen. The husband may have to sacrifice his after work nap. I don't know if any of you guys like that, but you know, the after work nap can be good. You know, maybe the after work relaxing at the TV or whatever it is. You may have to sacrifice that. But what do you gain? You may have to put forethought into stopping for some flowers or something else or whatever it is. Putting that forethought, planning, and sacrificing will drive our ability to worship God, deepen our connection with God. And that's what worship is really all about. Here's another example that I thought of. As we go from the house of God tonight, we all this week are going to have the need to eat multiple times, many times this week. I mean, that's a need you have 2 to 3 times a day for meals and even more than that for drinks and snacks, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's a lot when you really add up all that you have to have for a week. You multiply it by not only yourself, but your wife and kids or whoever else is present. You know what? That doesn't just happen. There's not just going to be, food there tomorrow. There has to, and you might be saying, well, yeah, there will be because our cupboards are full. We have things to eat. Why is that? Because you had intent to go to the store. You had the desire to put forth the work and the effort to give or to spend or sacrifice of what God had given you in order to buy that food, in order to bring it to your house, so that it would be ready for you when you need it. But that took intent, foresight, and planning, didn't it? It took all of that. And that, I hope that doesn't cheapen our understanding of worship. It just gives us the understanding or the thinking that it doesn't happen automatically. It doesn't just take place. Neither does our worship. We need to move with intent. And as we increase the intentionality of what we do, you will see in your life that we're not, I mean, the purpose of tonight is not focusing on our interpersonal relationships, but we're using that as a type or as something to relate to. You will see people respond to you. You will see your wife, you will see your kids respond to you when you move with intent instead of just figuring everything is going to work out. Because when you don't have intent, really what you're saying is, I am so special that everything ought to just happen. Ain't right? I mean, that's how it is for kings and presidents, it seems anyway. A lot, you know, they don't have to give much forethought or planning to a lot of things because it's done for them. Just because of who they are, things show up, things happen. And so we think like that. We think just because I'm the husband, just because I'm the wife, just because I'm the kid, these things ought to be. That's how we worship God. We come into His house and we think just because of who I am, being here is enough. Receiving, giving of my time is enough. But again, there's more to worship than that. The rest of that verse in James says, draw nigh to God and what? What does it say? And He will draw nigh unto you. There is a reaction always to intentionality. A reaction that you cannot manufacture any other way. And so we need to be that. David seems to understand that. His approach to God in this psalm is really unmatched a lot of times in our life. He understood that if he did not purpose to do it, it would not automatically happen. If he didn't purpose to do it, then he would be no better than the foolish workers of iniquity that he mentions is in verse 3. Notice here, back in verse number 1, three things that kind of jump out to me as I read this psalm this week that deal with intentionality. And these are some things that really precede worship. So as we think about the subject of worship, there are some things that come before, there are some things that transpire during, and there are even some things that happen afterwards. These are the things that would come before, things that precede worship in order for us to bring the sacrifice of praise, honor, and glory unto God. I mean, just consider, just for a moment, we're not going to chase this down, we'll probably look at it more in the future, but in Old Testament times, when they brought a sacrifice, there had to be intentionality and planning. There had to be purposing in order that they would have the right sacrifice. That they would have the lamb without spot or blemish for the Passover. That they would have, the turtle doves. That they would have whatever it is that was needed for the time. And they had to raise that animal. They had to keep that animal. Now, in later times, they were able to buy those things. But still, they had to have a plan and purpose about them to go through those things. And so it is for us. There are some things that precede worship. And David says here, notice in verse 1 and 2, give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my meditation. Hearken unto the voice of my cry, my King and my God, for unto thee will I pray. First thing here, as far as intentionality and worship is concerned, we find the subject of prayer. David clearly had a habit of prayer. But I want you to notice in the way that he speaks to God, David did not just automatically assume because he was speaking, God was listening. He did not just automatically assume that God was hanging on every syllable that would drip from his heart. Now we should have the confidence that when we pray unto God with a heart that is free from iniquity, that God does hear our prayers. But see the humility in David's words here. He asked God to hear him. He calls upon God to listen, to hearken unto his prayers. He approaches God from that place of humility, and that is, when prayer is done correctly, that's what it does for us. It humbles us into the place where we are supposed to be, approaching unto the high and holy throne of heaven. Yes, we come with boldness that we may find grace to help in time of need, but in humility we bow before God. David didn't just assume because of who he was, God was going to be hanging on his every word. And we know God knows every word that proceeds out of her mouth. We know all of those things. But David wanted more than that. He saw his prayer as more than just God being aware of what he said. He wanted God to hear. As he says there, give ear to my words. But he also wanted him in verse 2 to hearken. He wanted to connect and to commune with God. He didn't just want it to be a passing thing, but he wanted it to be a connection that he made with God in a very intimate way. You know, a lot of times when we talk to one another, either the person talking or the person listening isn't really connected. You know, I pick on guys a lot because, you know, like I said, that's what I have experience with. But if I have one box open and my wife's talking to me about something that's important to her, sometimes I don't hear. I don't listen. We're having a conversation, but I'm not really present. And David here says, God, I want you to hear. I want you to hearken. I want you to listen. I want to be connected with you in a great way. Prayer precedes worship. Without prayer, we cannot worship God. Why? Because without prayer, there is no communication from us to God. I mean, think about that. We have communication from God to us through what? Through His Word. Through the Spirit. But prayer is our main source of communication to God. How can we come in with a sacrifice of honor and praise and glorify God in worship? How can we do that even throughout the week if we are not communicating with God? I don't know when or if it will be a part of this or something else, but the Lord has really shown me over the last, year that communication is the bedrock of relationship in every way. And when you really look at it, man or woman, doesn't really matter. We all are really terrible at it. We have gotten to the place where society has taught us, or we have adapted in certain ways, and we just don't communicate. We can't in many ways. It is so very difficult. And when you really get to that place where you try and where you really communicate, it's hard and it hurts. And that's why we don't do it. We like to throw around words and we like to sound like we're interested, or we like to do those things. But how often do we really communicate? That is, bring out the desires of the heart to show them to others. Or, on the other end of that, to listen and really care. So David's after here with God. He desired that communication. I mean, the root word of communication is commune. To draw closer one to another. And we can't have a successful relationship at all. And you know, it's present in all of our relationships, but especially in our marriages. Communication is at an all-time low. We need to work on being better communicators in everything that we do and everything that we are. And get past those barriers. Get past those defenses. Get past those things that we throw up and try to guard ourselves through. And really, really connect with each other. And so David prays for that here. Our intention to worship can be seen in our prayer life. In verse number 3, David says, my voice shalt thou hear in the morning. He tells God, you're going to hear from me. I'm going to talk to you. Give ear. Hearken. I want to commune. I want to communicate. I want to know you. I want to be able to speak to you. I want you to hear what I have to say. Not because of who I am. But David understood who God was, and that drew him unto him. And that's what led David to be able to worship God in this passage. And the other one we read this morning was a great example of that as well. And so ask yourself, am I intentional about my prayer life? So often my prayer life gets put on autopilot, and if the prayer life is on autopilot, then so is my worship. When it is just something that you sprinkle throughout the day and are not intentional about itself, it is that prelude. It is that prelude to worship. There must be that communication. If we're not talking to Him, we're not worshiping Him, we're failing at this. Let us be intentional about our prayer life, that we may be intentional about worship. It's just like that meal planning. We have to have the intent and the desire to go out and buy it if we are going to eat. If we're going to prepare food, have to. And so we need to prepare ourselves for worship through prayer. And then we also notice, the end of verse number one, the second thing is meditation. Give ear unto my words, O Lord, consider my meditation. David also calls upon God to consider his meditations. That is, the time that he had spent pondering God. I mean, that's what I want you to think about when you hear that word, meditation. Not the Eastern religious philosophy of transcendentalism or any of those kinds of things. When you hear the word meditations, think about the time that you escape the world around you and through your heart and spirit ponder the things of God. Ponder God Himself. Ponder your relationship, drawing close to Him in the Spirit. The time He had left off the busy pursuits of the world and focused entirely upon Him. Entirely upon Him. There was a time when, of course, fasting was a much bigger deal than it is today. It is still found in the Word of God, of course. And part of the point in fasting was that you would replace that focus or the energy you would spend upon finding and preparing and eating food, and you would put that focus upon God and search after the things of God. What if we did that? What if we, and you can leave off even the fasting part to start with, but what if we came into the house of God, 30 minutes before the service ever started and just escaped the busyness of the world and sat and just thought, meditated, perhaps looked at God's Word, and how would that aid our worship? Maybe we did that before we came into God's house, even at home before we ever left, whatever it is. Most of us are so busy and so scheduled to the T that we don't leave time for that. And it upsets things when we try to make time for it. And we need to be intentional about our meditation. It takes effort, it takes work to shut down the thoughts of the mind and to focus the heart upon the things of God. It takes sacrifice to find the time, because in doing so, you also have to shut yourself off to those around you, to what's going on in your life at that moment. It could be 5 minutes. That's useful. Could be longer. That's useful too. David says, consider my meditation. Because worship isn't a spiritual endeavor, because it cannot be done out of a habit or an act. We need to be intentional about it. And I would say that meditation also precedes worship. The time that maybe you're not going through the habit of prayer, as far as, you know, you are either audibly or in your mind reciting words unto God, but your heart is communing with God through that time of just being still and quiet before Him. It takes effort. That does not happen on its own, does it? It certainly doesn't. Because a lot of times, if we have 5 free minutes, we're looking for a job to do, we're looking for a break, we're looking for a lot of other different things that we can do. We must do it. We must be intentional about meditating to draw closer unto the Lord, that it may fuel our fire, that it may reignite us to worship God. Psalm 63 verse 6 says, "When I remember thee upon my bed, and meditate on thee in the night watches." Notice also Psalm 73 and verse 12. David obviously had a habit also of meditation. "When I remember thee," he said in Psalm 63, "and on my bed, the night watches." Also Psalm 73 verse 12. Yeah, I wrote down the wrong verse on that one. I don't make that mistake too often, but let me see if I can find it here. It's not verse number 12. Well, I can't find it here quickly, but there was another verse in Psalm 73 that talks about meditation, talks about seeking after the Lord in that way. David obviously had a habit of that. Let us also have a habit of meditating on the things of God. Do that through devotion. Do that maybe even connected to our prayer. Do that in such a way that we would be able to draw closer to God. It precedes worship. And you can see these things if you would relate them to the husband I was talking about earlier, as far as his relationship with his wife. What if he called his wife during the day and said, "Honey, I'm thinking about you. How's your day going?" And then, well, you know, so he communicated with her. And then, what if during his ride home, he meditated or he thought about her and that interaction with her, or how her day's been, all those kinds of things? What's his heart going to be drawn to when he gets home? Of course, unto her. And the same with our God. If we are not communicating, if we're not meditating, is our heart really going to be drawn to God just because we walk through the doors? Not so much. Now, we may still receive, of course, from the Word of God through the preaching, a benefit. We may be able to leave even in a better place than we came, but will we have given of ourselves spiritually unto the Lord? And then the third thing really is putting these two things together, because the intention of worship is clearly visible in the words and actions of David in Psalm chapter 5. It all adds up to preparation. That's really where it's at. It all adds up to preparation, and what a dreaded word that is to us. It's just such a hard word, isn't it? We like to take it as it comes, don't we? We like to be natural and handle things on the fly. We like to float through life and handle this situation and that situation and all of those kinds of just take it as it comes sort of approach. But that doesn't work with our worship. We must prepare if we are to be intentional about our worship and coming into the house of God. But there is also a worship that proceeds during our daily lives. You can't, again, just expect it to happen. You must prepare your heart and your life. You must prepare your spirit to worship God in a day. As we do it individually. The benefit to coming together on the Lord's Day are many, but where worship's concerned is that we are all setting this day aside, as God has instructed, to all of us bring those sacrifices together, that we might give them all in unison to God. And so we need to be intentional, and through preparation that is done. This means that we prepare an offering, a sacrifice for the Lord in advance. Through our daily prayers, through our meditations, through our communing with God, through our drawing near to God, communicating with Him, drawing closer to Him. This means scheduling our lives around His call to worship and to be in His presence. This means sacrificing whatever we have to be on time, to have a clear mind, to be able to bring that with us that God desires of us to give unto Him. Whatever it takes, it's not too much to ask of God. And again, that takes that intentional preparation. And you can take this for what it's worth, but it took me a while to realize this and to understand this, but Sunday is not the day to sleep in. Sunday is not the day to do things differently than you do on the days you go to work. It took me a long time to learn that. For so long, I wanted it to be basically my morning. And then, be able to take it slow and easy. For a long time, it was the only morning I had where it wasn't up and off to work. And so I thought, I'll just lay in bed. I'll just do, whatever, and just take it easy and let my wife deal with the kids and all that sort of thing. That doesn't work. It doesn't work when we step outside of those things, when we try to schedule or try to fill a whole bunch of things in. That doesn't work. We can't be ready for worship, and we can't bring a sacrifice of praise if we behave in that manner. We've got to be intentional about what we bring unto the Lord. And many times our worship is not acceptable because there is no preparation. If I were to give you some homework, I don't know if you do it or not, but read Malachi chapter 1 and read about those things that the priests were sacrificing unto God that they wouldn't even give to, I think the word there is their governors or their, leaders at the time. They wouldn't even give them to them, but they were giving them to God. And so that's how a lot of times we focus or we do our worship. There is no preparation, and we kind of fly by whatever's happening. So let us commit tonight to be intentional about our worship to God, to our communicating with God in prayer, to our meditating on the things of God, that we might draw near to Him, because this is a relational issue. And so it is, and all adds up to preparation. Our earthly relationships suffer when we are not intentional in how we engage in them, and so too our worship is hindered when we are not intentional in the way that we move through them. And so I challenge you, I challenge myself, I challenge my family to reignite our hearts concerning the subject of worship. And tonight, the key to that, or the thought to that, is being intentional with that adoration, being intentional with that worship, that we might prepare ourselves, that we might have a specific thing to give unto God when we come in to His house. Not time and money, that's part of it, that's something else entirely to think about, but a thought on your heart, a desire in your mind to sing a praise, to offer a prayer. Not, and some will think, well, can't I just do that at home? Well, you can do that at home the other 6 days of the week. But this day you get to come, you get to do it together, collectively, praying silently along, everyone offering up that worship and praise is a powerful thing. That's probably how the church at Jerusalem had the place shaken and turned the city upside down. So let us stand once for the mic, musicians to come, conclude.